Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Christine DiMattei. For decades, Biscayne Bay has been one of those postcard areas perfect for luring tourists here. But if you look closer, and in the right areas, you'll see some nasty things pockmarking that beautiful lagoon. Toxic algae blooms, for one. And then there's all that trash and debris that gets caught in the mangroves around the majestic Vizcaya Museum. Where does the pollution come from? And where does it go to? Does it sweep out to sea for a time and then drift on back? Or does it just keep endlessly circling the bay? A team of researchers from the University of Miami has just begun a project that they think can answer some of those questions. And joining us over the phone is Dr. Tomei Osgaukman. He's an oceanographer with UM's Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science. Doctor, thank you for joining us.
Hi.
And also joining us via Skype is Miami Herald environmental reporter Jenny Stiletovich. Jen.
Hi, Chris.
Always a pleasure. Great to have you on again.
Thanks.
Now, Dr. Osgaukman, on Monday, your team released some floating devices into the bay. They kind of look like little white floating steering wheels attached to pinwheels. What exactly are they? What are they supposed to do?
So, as you indicated, the Biscayne Bay and in general the coastal areas all around the United States, of course South Florida is a very good example, they are under a lot of pressure due to population increase. People come to Miami both in terms of living here and tourism because of great beaches and water. It's really the number one attraction. But then there's a lot of pollution, there's a nuclear reactor on the bay. It's not the best place for a nuclear reactor to be. People started pumping water from South Beach into the bay in order to eliminate flooding. There's Miami River carrying out all kinds of things into, again, Biscayne Bay. Modifications are taking place in the Miami Harbor because they have increased the size of the Panama Canal. And there'll be larger ships coming, so these ships will further strain the system.
Right, so in that one body of water, there's a lot going on. And you're making a study of that. So these little white floating steering wheels, what are they supposed to do?
So what we wanted to know is all these things that are released in the water are carried by ocean currents. And we are not very well aware of the ocean currents. I've been here at Rasmus for 21 years, and I recently became aware that we actually never measured these currents. And we are now able to measure these currents due to recent developments in technology. We were able to make these devices that are kind of small and very, very accurate in terms of ocean currents. And most importantly, you need a lot of these devices to measure the currents because the ocean is a very big place. And we were able to make these devices totally biodegradable. So these disintegrate in water without harming anything over a few months. And if you put plastic, previously they used to have plastic devices, they look like plastic, but they're not plastic, they disintegrate. And if you use plastic, they last 1,000 years. So plastic is something that's not digested very well by the Earth system.
So these are biodegradable,
yes,
these devices?
Yes, they are 100% biodegradable, harmless to the environment, and they will provide the data that we need to understand ocean currents.
Ocean currents and microcurrents, and we'll get to that, Doctor, in a second. Jen Stiletovich, this project seems to be born from frustration. The Frost Museum in Vizcaya and places like that saying, hey, where's all this trash coming from? The trash that's beating against the mangroves and sort of suck there and staying there. But this is not a recent problem, right? I mean, we've had this pollution for a long time. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I think what happened was the folks at Vizcaya and Frost were doing these beach cleanups, which have been going on for years. And in particular at Vizcaya, they would find this trash daily. They had ground crews, they said, that would have to get out there every single day and clean this up. And so at one of these beach cleanups, they ran into one of Tamai's colleagues and who was talking about their study of currents and how they were looking at the BP oil spill and studying that, they discovered that there were all these micro currents that steered the oil around. We know a lot about the big currents like the loop current and the Florida Current, but Tamai's crew discovered that these little currents were really powerful and had a big impact. So they were like, well, can we use that same kind of technology or, you know, science to look at what happens in Biscayne Bay? And so that's kind of how they came together. And Tamai obviously can talk about this more,
right.
But he's just starting to look at it. But I found it like absolutely fascinating that, you know, the stuff that they had learned from the BP oil spill could be applied locally. And I think he said the same thing to me earlier, you know, to see how the pollution moves around Biscayne Bay, which is a bay that's been altered over the years. You know, it no longer has its natural proportions. It's now got these dredged up islands, and so the currents have completely been altered, and so, you know, that's what he's looking at.
And this is all very sophisticated science. So if any of our listeners have any questions for our guest today, please call 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. And Dr. Özgökmen, why is there so little known about the circulation in the bay? You've got those larger currents and then the microcurrents. Why is so little known? This bay has been here a very long time.
Right. So, you know, the way we do research is essentially based on research funding. And for years and years, our research funding has been coming from submarine warfare due to Cold War. And that's deep ocean. So we were really, really looking at the deep ocean. How Russian submarines move. This was acoustics, essentially. This is how the school was established in the 50s. It's essentially after the Second World War for Cold War. And recently we have been getting interested into more environmental issues. The BP oil spill was a big source of funding. So it's a bit like, because since we put so much effort and time into these things, we need the support for that. And this is actually something I realized that we can do fairly easily because we had a lot of leveraging from, just volunteer, Vizcaya Museum of Gardens, Frost Museum, International Seakeeper Society. So it's not something that we need a big boat and be out there for weeks and months and all that stuff. So we can do it very easily because we are on the bay.
Okay,
and
we have the
technology. So it's something we can do very easily after what we learned from all this other experience, and this is how it turned out to be.
And anyone who checks out Jenny's story on the Miami Herald website will see an interactive map of the lagoon of Biscayne Bay with what looks like a dozen or so little Etch-a-Sketch squiggles. Okay, and a very, very tender part of my childhood there, playing with Etch-a-Sketch, appearing on the map.
Yeah.
And Dr. Özgökmen, you're laughing. You know what Etch-a-Sketch is. What are those red dots and the black squiggles attached to them? What do they represent?
So these are drifters that are released. And, of course, when you release them, they just move a little bit. And the school kids, many school kids did that, and we did that. But then overnight, okay, you can see how far they go, and the bay has a very complicated geometry. There are islands and inlets and all that stuff. And what we are trying to really understand, it's also in Jenny's stories, if you, let's say, pollutants enter a part of this very complicated place, do they stay there? How long do they stay there? If they stay there for a long time without interacting with the outer big ocean, Florida Current, that's not really great news for society. I know that there can be all kinds of things growing inside. And we want to understand how long it takes them to flush into the ocean. So those things are essential trajectories of these drifters in the ocean. And we are just getting more and more data every day. We have enough batteries for 2 months. And we are going to be doing that every 3 months and have a conclusion about what's going on around here.
Okay. Doctor, you said you're going to be, let me understand, you're going to be releasing those devices every 3 months?
Yeah. We are going to be doing that just because of curiosity, and we are concerned, really. And maybe students, high school students will, one of the objectives is to really increase awareness about how complicated the currents are, and that science has to be part of the decisions made about how to release these pollutants in the ocean, how to deal with this increasing coastal pressures in terms of environmental pollution. So maybe the students will, look at the data, and people will look at the data. You know, once you it just open a window in your minds about the ocean, you are really, really interfacing with the ocean, and you don't want to be cutting the branch of the tree branch you're sitting on, because that's why you are here. And this is the first step, and then we probably do deeper and deeper scientific studies as we go along.
And right now we're going to take a call from Felix. He's got a question. Felix, welcome to the show.
Yes, how you doing?
You have a question for us?
Yeah, I wanted to know where all the garbage is coming from.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, Jen, Dr. Husgockman, Jen, Felix says, where is all of it coming from?
Well, I think it depends on the kind of garbage. I mean, anybody who walks along the shore can see plastic water bottles, you know, styrofoam, that stuff gets thrown off boats. That's just the debris that washes up. What interests me more is the invisible garbage that comes from stormwater runoff and the kinds of things that you can't see that, frankly, can be a little bit more damaging to marine life.
And I had a question about that, too, for Dr. Husgockman. Jen, you wrote an article a couple of months ago about what happens when Miami Beach gets hit with a king tide and that runoff that's coming from Miami Beach. And I do believe that there was some E. coli drifting into the bay. Am I wrong?
No, right. That's okay. What a team from FIU, actually, and NOAA found that.
So, Dr. Husgockman, is this study going to help kind of track that sort of pollution? I do believe we've lost Dr. Husgockman. So, Jen, let's move on.
I've talked to him. I mean, when I went out with him and we talked about that, and that was one of the things that he hoped would come of this study is that the information they collected on how these currents carry the pollution would inform decisions about where those outfall pipes go as more and more pumps are put in, and not just Miami Beach. I mean, it's easy to single out Miami Beach because their pumps are so new, but these outfall pipes are all along the coast, and there's going to be, as there's increased flooding with climate change, there's probably going to have to be bigger pumps or more numerous pumps, and what we do with that stormwater
And we've got Dr. Husgockman back. Doctor, okay. Welcome back. Sorry about that.
I missed a little
bit. Good to have you back there. Now, that question that other caller had, that question that I had, is this the new technology going to help us track more, damaging sorts of pollution like E. coli, et cetera?
Yeah, so we really want to, if you find, for instance, we want to see these things, we actually put them in the rivers. For instance, Miami River and where the pumping stations are, and these things presumably track these currents, essentially where the pollutants coming out from these discharges go. And that's the first order question. Do they flush into the ocean or do they stay around in the bay for a very, very long time? And that's the first attempt. And then once we know more about that, we can go deeper. I don't want to promise too much. It's just how we start.
That's okay. You don't have to promise anything. We're good.
Yeah.
But how long before we get some answers?
Oh, we probably have some answers now. We have to look at the data. I would say a few weeks the data is very immediate. We don't have to necessarily spend a lot of time. It's very intuitive to see, where do things come from and where do things go? That's a very fundamental and very complicated question. So we probably have some answers now within, I would say, a week or days, really.
Jenny, one pretty cool part of this whole endeavor employs some good old-fashioned message-in-a-bottle romance married to 21st century social media. Please tell us about the drift cards, because this is really cool.
Yeah, so this is something that Frost and Vizcaya and Tamai's group put together, these biodegradable cards, and they painted them. It got some volunteers to paint them on one side, and then on the other side is information about the study. And what they wanted to do was draw attention to the study and to the bay itself. On the back is a number or a website where you can report the location. They want people, when they find them, to go ahead and log the location where they found them. If possible, take a picture and upload it to Instagram and hashtag it. I think it's Bay Drift.
Okay, so once again, if I'm on the beach, all right, or anywhere near Vizcaya, near Frost Museum, and I see one of these cards, one of these cards drifts up. It's got complete information, complete instructions on what to do and where to report, where I found it. Okay,
right.
And how often are people going to be releasing these drift cards out into the bay?
I believe they're going to release the drift cards when Tamai releases the drifters. So that'll happen about every 3 to 4 months as well. I think they released 320 this week, and then I'm not sure in the future how many will be released each time.
And they try and time it.
Oh, okay. And they try and time it, like there's a coastal cleanup coming up. I think they're through the year, they're going to try and tie it to different events like that.
Okay. And what I'm assuming these cards, the materials used to make them are totally green. Otherwise, it would be defeating the purpose of tossing them into the bay, right?
Totally green. We spend a lot of time to make them totally green, as yes, and we are timing it with the cleanup. For instance, tomorrow there's a coastal cleanup, and we see what happened over the last week.
Wonderful. And just a very quick question for both of you before we go. How many other environmental challenges could be overcome or at least better understood using this technology?
Oh, there's a large number. Of course, coastal pollution is a big one, and oil spills. We spend a lot of time with oil spills. The other things are, for instance, providing information to oil companies because they drill deeper and deeper in the ocean. And they want to know if there's a very strong ocean current, for instance, in the loop current, that are very strong, and they cannot drill over certain speeds. So we can tell them, hey, this is the ocean currents are strengthening, and get your equipment out there so that a disaster can be actually avoided.
Dr. Tamai Oz-Gaukman, oceanographer with the University of Miami, also joining us, Miami Herald reporter Jenny Stiletovich. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we need to take a quick break. Just ahead, All Aboard Florida has big plans for a passenger train service from Miami to Orlando, but a federal lawsuit and a potential funding hassle might stand in the way. We'll be right back.